Welcome to Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. Today, we're going to look again at the climate catastrophe, and we'll hear about a group of youth who are suing the state of Florida for not doing enough to protect the climate. One of our guests is one of the young people, and we'll also hear from one of her lawyers, and we'll take your calls. Here's the number to call in, 813-239-9663. If you'd like to email, you can email DJ at WMNF.org. You can also text 813-433-0885. Well, eight young Floridians have sued the state of Florida, Governor Rick Scott, and others for violating their constitutional rights by endangering their futures through not doing enough to control the runaway problem of climate change. So today we're going to hear from one young plaintiff and from one of her lawyers. Delaney Reynolds is an 18-year-old college freshman and a climate activist from Miami, and Guy Burns is an attorney and managing partner at Johnson Pope Boker, Ruppel, and Burns, based in Tampa. They're part of the team suing Florida for not taking action on the climate disaster. So welcome to WMNF's Midpoint, Delaney and Guy.
Good to be here.
You there? Hi, Mr. Canaan. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
Yeah, thanks so much, Delaney, and please call me Sean. So let's begin by asking, why do you say, and this is these are words from your lawsuit, that you've been seriously injured because of Florida officials' indifference to your fundamental rights to a stable climate system?
Well, so living in Miami and growing up between here and the Florida Keys, where my family has a solar-powered home, my life has always been surrounded by water. And as I've been growing up, I've seen sea level rise become worse and worse. And I've seen it impact communities, including my own, here in Miami and in the Florida Keys. And I've seen it impacting people, their businesses, their homes. Literally every single aspect of our community is currently being impacted, and it's only going to get worse. And so that's why I said what I said in the lawsuit, because this is a serious issue, and it's currently impacting everyone.
That's the guest of Delaney Reynolds. She's calling in from Miami. She's an 18-year-old college freshman, and climate activist from Miami. Let me ask you this, and I don't know if you, Delaney, want to answer this or if Guy wants to answer, but how did you pick which defendants to sue? Let me read the list of people and agencies that you're suing. You're suing the state of Florida and its governor, Rick Scott, the Florida Department of Environmental Protection and its secretary, Noah Valenstein, Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services and its commissioner, Adam Putnam, the Florida Board of Trustees of Internal Improvement Trust Fund, and the Florida Public Service Commission. So why are these the organizations and people that you're suing?
Delaney, I'll go ahead and take that one. That's because the Florida Constitution and various statutes in the state of Florida have imposed obligations on these constitutional officers and the various others that we've named. The Florida Constitution in Article 2, Section 7 also has a provision that we say is in the nature of a trust that the governor and Commissioner Putnam and Mr. Valenstein are essentially among those who are trustees of the environment for the benefit of the Floridians, including the plaintiffs in this case.
Have you gotten any formal legal response yet from any of these people that you're suing?
Not yet. We've just filed the case. Service of process is being affected. I think it's mostly been accomplished, but they then have 20 days to respond. It's not unusual that defendants ask for extra time to respond, so we're in the early stages.
Well, let's hear from Governor Rick Scott, because reporters asked about this the day or the day after this lawsuit was filed, about a week and a half ago, if I'm not mistaken. And so Governor Scott was asked this by reporters, and he didn't give a very long answer, as you might expect, because, you know, people usually don't comment on pending lawsuits. But here is Governor Rick Scott's response.
Whether it's flood mitigation, beach renourishment, we have done a lot of things with regard to moving the water south of Lake Okeechobee. We've spent, I think it's $450 million on our freshwater spring. So we're working hard to solve problems.
We're working hard to solve problems. And he talked a lot about moving water south through the Everglades. And this was in response to a question about this lawsuit, this wide-arching lawsuit about Florida's not doing enough to stop carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gas emissions. And so I should ask Delaney, what do you think about Governor Rick Scott's response there?
I think that it's a ploy to deceive people and to avoid the truth about climate change. So the truth is that in 2010, when Rick Scott first ran for governor, he told reporters that asked him about climate change that he wasn't convinced it was real. In 2014, when he ran again, he famously announced that he was not a scientist when he was asked about climate change. And in 2017, during our region's Hurricane Irma recovery, he was asked again about climate change, and he didn't ever answer the question. And instead, he talked about getting the power companies back up and running and supplying gas for cars. And so the press is filled with all sorts of stories about people in his administration confirming that he doesn't even want the state using phrases like climate change, sea level rise, or global warming. And so I think that his comments are a ploy to deceive you. His budget does not address climate change, as he suggested in his comments, and any suggestion otherwise is actually a lie. In fact, much of his environmental budget is for items that are decades in the making, such as Everglades restoration, sewers in Monroe County, or Lake Okeechobee's dikes. And so if you were to ask him where all that budgeted money to reduce carbon in Florida's atmospheres and waters are, he won't be able to show it to you. It does not exist. So his response was basically just political theater. It was a farce, and it's just him suggesting that he and the state are actually addressing climate change and concerned about it, and it's just simply not true.
So, Guy, do you have anything to add to what Delaney's saying?
Yes. Delaney gave a very intelligent response to what a lawyer might say is irrelevant as far as my response to the governor's comments. I think Delaney and all the plaintiffs would regard money spent on Everglades restoration as a laudable thing to do, although, as she points out, it's been years in the making. But our lawsuit deals with carbon emissions and greenhouse gases and the environmental effect of those toxins being placed in our environment in ever-increasing large measures, and the subsequent rise of temperature of the seas and sea level rise and other environmental disasters, impending disasters that go along with the greenhouse gas problem. Nothing that Governor Scott said directs itself to the greenhouse gas problem, which is what our lawsuit's about. So his comments are irrelevant and somewhat of a distraction to the real issue.
And it makes you wonder, I don't know how far out on a limb I want to go here, but it makes you wonder whether the governor even really understands what the issue is. I mean, if you start talking about moving water south toward Lake Okeechobee, when your question is about greenhouse gas emissions, I mean, it makes me wonder, I have to say, I have to be honest, it makes me wonder whether he even understands what it's all about.
Well, I'll give my 2 cents worth, and then Delaney can follow. But politicians generally, and Governor Scott is adept at being a politician, although he claims not to be one. But no matter what question you ask a politician, they're very adept at what they call pivoting and moving to something else that they want to say that really may not be responsive to the question at hand. And I think that's just what he did there.
Sure. And Delaney?
Yes, I would agree with that. He has met with scientists from all over the state who are deeply involved with climate change and studying the science behind it, and they presented the facts to him. And so I'm pretty sure that he knows what's going on, but instead he and the state government are choosing to put politics and special interests ahead of protecting our natural environment. And that is absolutely disgraceful, and it's time for that to come to an end. And so that's why me and my co-plaintiffs have decided to sue the government and Governor Rick Scott, because the time has come for us to finally put politics aside and actually begin solving this problem based on the science and common sense before it's too late.
Our guest is Delaney Reynolds. She's an 18-year-old college freshman and a climate activist from Miami. She's one of eight young Floridians who are suing Governor Rick Scott and the state of Florida and some of the agencies and other department heads in the state of Florida for not taking action on the climate disaster. And you're listening to WMNF's Midpoint on 88.5 FM. It's 12:16 in the afternoon. Here's the number to call in, 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. Let's take a question from Richard in Clearwater. Hi, Richard.
Hi, my name is Richard, and I'd like to address what you're talking about, Delaney. I'm a student over at SBC College, and I'm an environmental sustainability program. And one of the main issues, that's not really a question, I just wanted to make a statement. One of the main issues that these politicians need to come to the grips of is acknowledging the fact that there is climate change, and they won't. Okay, and that stance alone shows you their ignorance and how they won't address the biggest problem. And there's probably a million problems to get to the big problem, and they don't want to acknowledge any of those problems. So until they do, we're not going to get anything done. Thank you.
Richard, thanks for that call. And so, Delaney, let's take it from there. That's one of the things that you're asking for in your lawsuit. If you win, if the judge decides to take your side, one of the things that you're asking for is for the leaders in Florida to acknowledge climate change.
That's absolutely correct. Basically, we want the state to take responsibility and to begin fixing the problem, to enact laws and plans to actually follow and enforce so that we can start to clean up our atmosphere of carbon dioxide and reduce the damage that carbon dioxide is doing to our atmosphere and our waters, our public trust resources. And so I think that we can all agree that every listener knows that you would never park a car in a garage and turn the ignition on with the doors closed. Why would you do that? Why wouldn't you do that? Because the carbon dioxide emissions from the car will kill us. And so if those carbon dioxide emissions are killing us, then as we pump massive amounts of that same carbon dioxide into our planet, it's killing our atmosphere and our waters and our environment too. And so it's my hope that the judicial system will demand the state enforce Florida's constitution and our public trust doctrine to protect our environment, including our atmosphere and waters. And I actually spoke at the Tampa Bay in Tampa Bay last summer, and I talked to the commission about implementing a solar ordinance, kind of like the one that we have here in South Miami. And they were very receptive to the idea. And I think that St. Petersburg and the Tampa Bay region is a very progressive region. And so I want to commend all of you listeners and basically everyone there in Tampa for actually taking initiative with climate change and trying to become as sustainable as a city as possible, because it's very commendable, and that's what we need to be doing all over the state of Florida in order to solve this problem. So thank you for your initiative.
And Guy, I should ask you, Delaney there said that the state should enforce the public trust doctrine. What does that mean?
Well, it means that the cabinet, and particularly the governor is the lead, and Commissioner Putnam, who has certain responsibilities as Secretary of Agriculture, sit as fiduciaries for the environment for the benefit of people. Just like if there was a trust that your grandmother left to you and left the First National Bank as the trustee, they would have a fiduciary duty to you to protect the assets of the trust and make sure they're properly invested. The Constitution of the state of Florida and the common law that predates the existence of Florida both hold that the environment is a matter in which the leaders, the elected officials, hold in trust for the benefit of its citizenry. And we simply want a declaration of facts, first of all, a finding of facts that the climate change is real, that it's man-made, that it has having adverse effects on the environment, and then making the state's leaders discharge their fiduciary duties with coming up with a plan that's going to cut carbon emissions and to begin to deal with this problem. Failing the state coming up with a sufficient plan, we'll ask the court to impose its own plan. But we think that if you compare this to a school busing case, the courts first found, number one, there is a segregation in place. We need to desegregate. And they told the school boards, go come up with an integration plan that cures the problem. And then if the school boards failed to do that, then the courts took jurisdiction and said, we're going to go ahead and make up a plan and force that upon you. So it's a similar process that we're going to go through here.
Our guest, our Guy Burns, an attorney who is helping out in a lawsuit, and are you doing this? I should ask this: are you doing this pro bono, or what? What does the Our Children's Trust have to do with the lawsuit?
Our Children's Trust acts as a group that supports litigation throughout the country and other efforts, not just litigation involving climate issues and environmental issues. The lawyers, myself, and all the others are in the case pro bono. We do not receive any compensation for our time or effort.
And I want to know a little bit more about Our Children's Trust. And maybe Delaney, are you a good person to ask about that?
I think that either Guy or I could probably answer your question.
Yeah, so just I went to their website, and this is not the only place where action is being taken by our Florida Trust. You have indigenous children or youth in Alaska, maybe it was. Oh, I forget. So why don't you educate me as well as our listeners about some of the other things that Our Children's Trust is doing?
So Our Children's Trust has cases all over the United States in multiple different states, including Alaska, Oregon, Washington State, now Florida, and they also have a federal case against the federal government, the national government. And that's how I actually found out about Our Children's Trust and became involved. I learned about their federal case about 3 years ago and contacted them because I figured it's time for action here in Florida, too. And so I wanted to know if we could open up a similar case here in Florida. And so that's how I reached out to them. I emailed them. And now 3 years later, we have a case here in Florida. And so, yeah, they have cases all over the states. They just had an event in Alaska. Their Washington State case is moving forward, as is their Oregon one. And I think they actually have a trial for the federal case in October of this year.
And the common thread is that these young people are saying, we want our future protected and we want the environment protected for our future. And so we're going to take legal action to help to make that happen.
Our Children's Trust has coordinated this litigation, and they also they have some in-house counsel that are environmental experts and have the ability to help people like me who are appearing pro bono to do research and provide backup for us. In addition, there are a number of scientists, world-renowned experts that Our Children's Trust has relationships with, so they can help us marshal the scientific evidence to put that in front of the court in form of testimony and expert reports, et cetera. So Our Children's Trust has been invaluable. They started the federal case in 2015. That's been through and survived motions to dismiss. The government took an appeal trying to halt the case, and has passed that appeal. And as Delaney said, in late October, the trial in Oregon starts on that federal case.
That's Juliana versus United States?
Yes.
813-239-9663 is the number to call. We do have a lot of people on the line right now, but I think we have an open line. You can also email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. It's 12:24 in the afternoon. Our guests are Guy Burns, an attorney, and Delaney Reynolds, an 18-year-old college freshman. She's part of a team of eight young Floridians who are suing the state of Florida and some of the officers in Florida in order to help protect their future from climate change and the effects of climate change. Let's hear now from John in St. Petersburg. Hi, John.
Hi. I'm a second-generation Floridian. I knew Florida before Disney, and I want to thank you both for what you're doing. It's remarkable, and it seems to me that maybe a ray of hope in what's happened to Florida. I have two questions, and one is what's the legal precedent, the case law, for this? Has this sort of thing worked in Florida, and has it worked elsewhere? My second question is, I'm sure that Scott and Putnam et al. Will drag their feet. What happens to the case if we get people who are not climate refusers into Tallahassee after November?
Yeah, good questions. Guy, okay. You want to take those?
Yeah. John, good questions. First, there is a precedent for the public trust theory, which is the backbone of the case, although, quite frankly, we're not going to find a great number of cases out there that have tracked exactly what we're talking about. And so we're trying to, I don't want to say make new law, but we're trying to expand and build on the existing law as a result of this case and to enforce the public trust doctrine. The next part of your question is what happens after the next elections, which in November we're going to have a different governor and a different commissioner of agriculture. And so this case is not against either Governor Scott personally or Commissioner Putnam personally or any of the other defendants. It's against them in their official capacity. So whoever becomes governor would be substituted in for Governor Scott. As a veteran of some of the school cases, what happens is new school boards get elected, and occasionally you find a group that wants to work to solve the problem as opposed to resist the problem. And we've been successful in those cases in settling some of these matters in an amicable fashion and leaving the court in place to have jurisdiction to enforce that settlement. So maybe I'm overly optimistic, but I would hope that the voters pay attention to this issue, that the person and the people that they elect in the fall are more sensitive to the issue than the current office holders, and that we might all, in fact, get together and decide that something needs to be done, and we can fashion out a remedy, and Delaney can negotiate with the new governor to have a good result.
Thank you. Another good reason to knock on doors and then vote.
John, thanks so much for your call. 813-239-9663 is the number to call in if you'd like to ask a question of Delaney or of Guy. And I have someone who texted in a series of questions, and I'm going to see if I can maybe pick one or two of them. It was Jeff in Newport Richey. He writes a couple of things, but one is he must have missed the beginning of the show. He says, I'm going to use Jeff's words, even though he's making a derogatory comment about our young guest. He says, ask this feather brain exactly what injury she has sustained through the negligence of the people she's suing. So Delaney, you must have tuned in late to hear what injury you have, but why don't you lay it out?
Absolutely. So although I am still young, I am very passionate about climate change, because I've seen the effects get worse firsthand. Miami didn't used to flood when I was younger. The Florida Keys didn't used to flood when I was younger. And now they are. And it's only going to get worse. Right now in Miami-Dade County, it floods about 6 times per year. By 2030, by the time that I'm 30 years old, it's going to flood about 80 times per year. And by 2045, it could flood 380 times per year. So that means that some days it could even flood twice. So this issue is getting worse in my lifetime. I'm seeing the impacts. And so I'm extremely concerned. And that's why I've been so heavily involved, because my home is at risk here in Miami and in the Florida Keys. My fellow plaintiffs' homes are all at risk. They've all experienced other effects. And so I've been very negatively affected, also emotionally. It concerns me for my children's future, when I have children someday, when I have grandchildren someday. Will we even be able to live in South Florida? I hope that the answer will be yes, but that is something that seriously concerns me. And because of that, I've decided to finally take initiative and start to change things here in Florida, hopefully by suing the governor.
Delaney, are you a snorkeler or a diver?
Yes, I am.
And is there anything about the marine environment that would be affected by climate change in Florida?
Absolutely. So our coral reefs are being bleached because of ocean acidification due to increased temperatures from global warming. And I've actually seen that as well. I have pictures from diving experiences that I've had of bleached coral all over the Florida Keys. And there's also going to be less and less fish because they will move to cooler waters because they can't adapt to the warmer waters that we are experiencing here in Florida right now and all along the coast. and that's going to impact our fishing economy, which will impact a large portion of Florida's food supplies. And so all of these issues I've been seeing, whether it's terrestrial, whether it's sea level rise, whether it's underneath the water, which a lot of people actually don't know about because they can't see it all the time, which is why it's such a big issue. So there's all sorts of effects that are going to come from climate change. It's literally going to impact every single aspect of our society. And so while I respect different views, we really need to take this seriously.
Got it.
Yeah, a little bit further response to Jeff's question. First, I want to make sure that the listeners understand that these plaintiffs are not seeking any monetary damages for themselves. So if we prevail in this case, Delaney won't get any money. None of the other youth plaintiffs will get any money. But they represent the view, the interest of the public. Consider that as of now, this is not future, but as of now, the cities of Miami and Miami Beach have either spent or committed to spend several hundred million dollars to raise their streets because just at a normal high tide, they're having street flooding. And that type of expenditure is going to be realized by most of the coastal communities, and most of our population lives on the coast, so the taxpayers are going to be paying for that. Next, we have issues like flood insurance. Is that going to continue to be either available at all, or is it going to continue to be affordable as people have to be forced off of the coast? Next, mortgages. The typical home mortgage is a 30-year mortgage. Our mortgage company is going to continue to lend into areas that are prone to flooding and high level and sea level rise. Those are issues that will come about in the lifetime of the youth plaintiffs. I'm a little older. Whether that affects my lifetime or not, I'd like to think it would, because I'd like to be around to see it, even though that's not good news. But the reality is, in Delaney's lifetime, these effects will not only be environmental, but they will be real economic impacts on the taxpayers and citizens of the state of Florida. Our leaders have an obligation to protect not only the environment, but have an obligation to protect the economic effects, adverse economic effects that will occur from that environmental change.
Our guests are attorney Guy Burns and Delaney Reynolds, an 18-year-old college freshman. She's one of eight young Floridians who are suing the state of Florida and Governor Rick Scott and some others about the effects of climate change and the inaction that's happened in Florida. I'm going to give the number out to call again. We are going to go back to the phones in just a second. 813-239-9663. You can also email DJ at WMNF.org. You can text 813-433-0885. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF in Tampa. It's 12:33 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. And Delaney, you were talking about floods and how in the future Miami could flood more than once a day on average. One of the most striking things in the 62-page lawsuit that you filed against Rick Scott and the others are these series of maps. And these maps are, here's what Miami-Dade County, where you live, here's what it would look like with this amount of sea level rise or that amount. And it goes up to, I think, about 8 feet or 10 feet are some of the most extreme examples. But these are based on projections that are within the range of what could happen over the next century. I'm telling you, Miami-Dade County, it looks like you're looking at a map of the Florida Keys. It's essentially just a small, a series of hundreds of small islands is what Miami-Dade County looks like in some of these maps.
Yes, that could definitely be our future. Right now, experts predict that 2 to 3 feet of sea level rise is definitely going to occur because of the damage that we've already done in the past, all of the carbon dioxide that's already been put into our atmosphere. And so that's also a very conservative estimate. So like the maps say, it could become 6 feet, 10 feet. And in that case, yes, Miami-Dade County could be the modern-day Florida Keys. And the Florida Keys could be completely underwater. And that's why this issue is so important to me. I think that the global climate change crisis is the biggest issue that my generation will ever have to face. And how we decide to solve it will define our time here on this planet. And it's not only Miami-Dade that's being impacted. According to a 2015 report by the Tampa Bay Climate Science Advisory Panel, the Tampa Bay region has nearly 700 miles of shoreline and about 3.2 million residents. So anyone who lives near Tampa Bay or the Gulf of Mexico is highly vulnerable to potential effects of sea level rise. The region is its economy is closely tied to both the Gulf of Mexico and Tampa Bay and is valued at about, I think, $170 billion. And about $51 billion of that is directly influenced by the bay itself. So this isn't just a Miami-Dade issue. It's not just a coastal issue, especially here in Florida, because of the porous limestone. People who are inland will also be affected, so it's not just the beaches. So this is a statewide concern and issue, and that's why it's finally time for us to actually start taking measures to solve this problem. Like Guy mentioned, Miami Beach has been spending about $500 million to install pumps and raise roads, because sea level rise, before they started taking those measures, it basically rendered some streets unusable. People couldn't get to businesses. They couldn't get to restaurants. And that had a very negative impact on the economy and the tourism there, because Miami Beach's economy is based on tourism. And so it's going to affect Miami Beach even more. It's going to affect the Everglades, the Florida Keys, and sooner or later, even Central Florida and northern regions of Florida if it gets bad enough. And so that's why we really need to focus on starting to implement solutions for this problem.
That's the voice of Delaney Reynolds. She's an 18-year-old college freshman and climate activist from Miami. She's one of eight young Floridians who's suing Governor Rick Scott and the state of Florida. Also, we have attorney Guy Burns here in the studio, and the number to call in, 813-239-9663. Let's hear from Elizabeth in Riverview. Welcome back to the show, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Sean. I am so thankful that young ladies like this young lady who is on the air now are present and have sense enough to pay attention to this. My generation, and I'm quite old now, didn't. But I do remember about 8 years ago when Rick Scott was running for governor, my initial thought was, oh, he will never be elected. He's either a liar or he's stupid. And I based that feeling on the fact that he was in business before he became governor. He ran a health care something or other. And that group was caught, well, basically stealing money. And Mr. Scott said, oh, well, I may be CEO and all of that, but I knew nothing about that. So, like I say, he's either a liar or he's just plain stupid, and he is now running for another public office. Please, voters, pay attention this time. This series of votes that is coming up, starting in August with the primaries, is one of the most important voting periods that we in the state of Florida will face for a long time. We have to learn about all of the people who are running for office. We have to make certain that they do not think stupid things like, oh, there's no problem with the sea rise. If we do not pay attention, I'll be dead and gone. It won't matter to me. But I have children and grandchildren that live here. This young lady, Delaney, hopes to make a life here in Florida. There won't be a Florida. It will just, well, all right, I'm wandering on. But please, pay attention this time when you vote, people.
Elizabeth, thanks for the call, and I neglected to mention at the beginning to wish you a happy birthday. So happy birthday, belated, but thanks for calling in. And do either of you want to respond to any of that?
Well, I'll give you a couple of data points, not in direct response, but Governor Scott closes almost all of his commercials and his public service announcements and campaign speeches with "Let's get to work." And what we know is that the state of Florida spends approaching $60 billion a year to import fossil fuels to burn in our electric plants. And part of that is coal and part of it's natural gas, but we don't have those resources here, so we have to import them. And we do very little to capture sunshine. We do very little, if anything, to capture the energy associated with tidal movements. So we have a lot of And wind, of course, is also prevalent, used more in other states than here. But the let's get to work mantra would be employed by saying if we did use renewable sources of energy, probably we would employ as many as 300,000 people in the state to develop and maintain that. So it's a very work-oriented and economically sound investment to be made. You know, this is not just a bunch of let's all set our hair on fire and be, as Jeff would say in Newport Richie, feather brains. This has sound economic and business principles behind it. And so what Delaney is saying from an environmental standpoint happens to correlate very well with what we need to do for our own economic interest as well as environmental interest.
And your lawsuit points out that 3.1% of Florida's energy comes from solar. And yet, even though Florida is third in potential, it's 18th in how much solar is actually installed. So to your point of, well, there should be more solar, well, doesn't the free market sort all that out? And maybe the reason there's only 3.1% of Florida's energy comes from solar is that the businesses think they can make more money by burning coal and burning natural gas.
Well, the way that public utilities in our state get their rate set and their rate adjustment set is by essentially building new power generating facilities. And so their investments to date, including those on the drawing board that have been approved by the Public Service Commission and the cabinet and the site location people and et cetera, are natural gas based plants. They're not the public utilities, which generate about half of the carbon emissions in the state, are very heavily reliant upon fossil fuels, and they're the ones who need to make the change. And as long as they're incentivized economically to continue to burn fossil fuels, they're going to do that because that gets them the best return to their shareholders.
So, Delaney, if you do prevail in this lawsuit, is that something that you would like to change? And how might that change? How would you convince, I guess, the Public Service Commission or the governor or the legislature or whoever it would be to make solar more readily available to more Floridians?
Well, I've never really understood why our state government hasn't taken advantage of the amount of jobs that could be created through sustainable energy. And so I think that sustainable energy, just like solar power, is one of the best ways that we can begin to solve the climate change crisis, because it will dramatically cut down our carbon footprint. Solar power has the potential to create hundreds of jobs in our state and generate at least half of all the power that Floridians need by the time that I'm 45. So that's not that many years into the future. So if we were to just get serious, make this a mandate, and elect a leader that would actually demand a shift into the future rather than living into the polluting past, we could actually make a difference. So I would say that solar mandates are a great way to start doing that. Here in the city of South Miami, I contacted a bunch of mayors a couple of years ago about the solar laws that I had read about in California. And so I drafted a letter and sent it to about a dozen mayors here in South Florida. And the first response I got was from the mayor of South Miami. And so he and I began working hours and hours on end, taking any of the solar laws from California and molding them to fit the codes in South Miami. And then about a year later, we had a draft, and I presented it to the commission. And three readings later, they passed the law, and it became law in September of 2017. And so basically what that mandates is that any new construction of a house or a material renovation of an existing building has to install the maximum amount of solar power possible on its roof. And so that's a great step in the right direction. And honestly, we need mandates like that all over the state of Florida. As a matter of fact, like I mentioned, I talked to the St. Petersburg Commission about a similar law, and they began drafting it right away. And they have a finalized draft. And so hopefully this summer, I'm hoping to travel back up there to the Tampa Bay region to speak to them again, to see how we can move things forward and talk to them about any opposition that we face in South Miami so that they can see what they're going to expect. And I'm also planning to even potentially travel to Tallahassee to talk to a lot of other
commissioners, maybe. I'm working on that project with an organization called Solar United Neighbors. We just created some solar commercials, but they, one of the people involved with them, has invited me up to Tallahassee to speak on that. And so I think that what we need to do is just implement solar power everywhere, right, starting now. And so I'm hoping that through this lawsuit, whoever is governor and whoever is in the government of the state of Florida at the time will actually realize that solar power is a great opportunity for employment. People have to make the panels, install the panels, keep the panels running. And so it's a great opportunity for employment, and it's also a great opportunity to help our environment. So I'm hoping that that will be an outcome of this lawsuit as well.
Our guests are Delaney Reynolds and Guy Burns. Delaney is an 18-year-old college freshman. She's suing the state of Florida and Governor Rick Scott and some others about her climate future and about their inability to protect it so far from climate change. Guy Burns is one of their pro bono attorneys. You're listening to Midpoint on 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. I'm Sean Canaan. It's 12:46 in the afternoon, and someone just dropped off, but let's go now to Daryl in St. Petersburg. Hi, Daryl. What's your question?
Just a couple of quick comments. I've been here since 1957 in St. Petersburg, and I spent a lot of time under the water as well as on top of the water. So I've seen the water levels rise through the years, and a good example of that also is that I've also done a lot of paddling. And Chesawiska Preserve, if you look at the pictures from, say, 20 years ago, overhead pictures of the trees, you can see a massive amount of trees that have died because of the influx of the salt water intruding in. And that's a good example of just one place where this is making big changes. And something else, too, that I wondered if we couldn't bring into this is Article 2, Section 7 of the state constitution, scenic resources and natural beauty. And that's all being affected, too, and if that our state constitution, the law that's there, that's being violated by so many things, if they couldn't utilize that. And one more thing on the climate change is the acidification of the ocean. And I've seen a lot of your crustaceans and so on are having a difficult time. Their shells are softening and so on from the acidification, but also the biggest share of your, about 50-some percent of your oxygen comes from the ocean. And as the oceans are dying from the acidification, there goes a big source of our oxygen supply, and I don't hear anybody talking about that.
Yeah, phytoplankton and zooplankton, and definitely. So we will talk more about that, of course. So thank you for reminding me to do that. But this, the scientists definitely are concerned about acidification and how it's affecting all levels of life on the in the ocean. So thanks for that call, Daryl, and thanks for that perspective for decades in here. Now, I should ask Guy about that Article 2, Section 7, the natural beauty, protecting the natural beauty of the state. Is that part of your lawsuit?
Yeah, we are relying on Article 2, Section 7 as part of our trust theory. And I would point out, as Daryl has correctly stated, it does have some scenic beauty provisions, but specifically mentioned in Article 2, Section 7 is air quality. And so the carbon emissions and greenhouse gases that are being pumped into the air are a direct violation. And of course, the long-term ramifications are that as goes the air quality, there goes the scenic beauty and others. And so we think that Daryl's on exactly the right track.
And let me read an email from one of our listeners who is safely texting while someone else is driving. I hope Eve is writing. Eve writes that right now all the light poles on the Sunshine Skyway are on. Why not have solar-powered lights? So that's a question that maybe we'll just leave unanswered there. And David writes in with a subject line. I'll have to read that later. Chris is writing about the climate lawsuit. He or she is writing from Fort Myers. Can other parties sign on to join the lawsuit? Specifically, the lawyer mentioned the mortgage issue, but wouldn't this also affect property values? And wouldn't every homeowner be a potential victim in this issue? So if there are these eight plaintiffs, what about other people who feel that they are also part of this, are being harmed by inaction?
We have been approached by a number of groups and associations and individuals, and what we have suggested to them is that they should consider filing what are called amicus or amicus briefs with the court from these various perspectives, whether they be from the standpoint of insurance or mortgages or other economic interest or environmental interest, that they don't need to be a plaintiff to seek leave to file with the court papers and briefs and supporting documents that reflect their opinions and bring the court's attention to the economic harm they may face in the future.
813-239-9663. You know, I didn't mean to gloss over the idea of putting solar wherever. So I don't know, Delaney, do you want to weigh in on putting solar panels on this major bridge we have here in the Tampa Bay area?
I think it's a great idea. I think that anywhere that we can put solar, we should, because it's really going to help us cut down our carbon emission. Like I said, by the time that I'm 45, by 2045, solar could provide half of all of Florida's power needs if we were to just become serious about that problem. So it's a great opportunity for us to cut down on carbon emissions and start to take this problem seriously. It's also really beneficial for your pocketbook. Once it's installed, solar basically costs nothing. My home in the Florida Keys is solar powered, and our bill from month to month ranges between $5 and $15, depending on what month it is. And so that's great for your pocketbook, and it's great for the environment. So I think that anywhere that we can put solar, we should. And if you want to reach out to me about the things that I've done here in South Miami to start implementing solar, if you're from the St. Petersburg area and you want to help me support the commission with the solar law, please reach out to me. You can reach me. My website is miamicrise.com, or you can email me, Delaney@miamicrise.com, and I'd love to help implement solar as widely as possible here in the state of Florida. I think it's time for the Sunshine State to become the solar state.
That's Delaney Reynolds. She's an 18-year-old college freshman who is suing Governor Rick Scott in the state of Florida about her future and climate change and their inaction. We also have Guy Burns, an attorney, who's helping out on that suit. And I am going to go to the phones in just a second. So if you are still on the line, please hold on. I'm going to go take a couple of minutes to switch gears from the phones right now. We're going to hear from two of the candidates running for governor. I wish I had more of them right now, but there's still time between now and November to talk with everyone. But I've talked so far to two of the candidates for governor about climate change and about carbon dioxide emissions. Let's hear first from, in January, Philip Levine, who was the former mayor of Miami Beach, was in Tampa. And so I asked him, what's the role of Florida's governor? Well, you hear my question, I think, but I wanted to get to the point of what's the role of Florida's governor to control climate change. Here's Philip Levine's answer.
I've been asking all the candidates who are running for governor, what would be the role of a Florida governor in controlling carbon dioxide emissions?
Well, I think most importantly, we need to make sure we have a chief resiliency officer in the state of Florida. We were the first to do it in Miami Beach. We need one in Tallahassee. We also need regional resiliency officers to work along. And I think what we need to do overall is look at a way to reduce our carbon emissions as fast as possible. In Miami Beach, we led the effort, what's called Sierra Club Ready for 100, and we did it. And what we basically said is we took an inventory of our greenhouse gas emissions, and with that inventory, we committed to be fully renewable fuel efficient by 2035. I think a good idea for us would be to do an entire initiative to look at our entire greenhouse gas emissions statewide and commit to a program in a certain amount of years, like we did in Miami Beach, to be completely, fully, renewable fuel sufficient. I think that's the most important thing we could possibly do. I think it's something that's most important. I think we got to play our part. As we know what happened in Paris when the United States moved away from the climate Paris Treaty, I think it's up to the states and the cities to carry forth with those protocols.
So you would disagree with the Florida governor candidates that I've talked to who said Florida shouldn't do anything, they should wait and see what the Trump administration does?
Oh, I definitely disagree. I don't think we want to wait for Trump administration to do anything. If they all felt that way, I guess we would have oil drilling around the state of Florida. The fact of the matter is that we do not want to continue to be reliant on fossil fuels. They call us the Sunshine State. They don't call it the partly cloudy state. We need to begin pushing forward with solar energy. We need to own that business. It's a great economic opportunity for the state of Florida. Creates incredible amount of jobs. I can tell you, even in Saudi Arabia right now, they're making investments in solar energy because they know the future of fossil fuels is very limited and their inventory of fossil fuels is limited. Why would we allow them and the Chinese to move forward in being leaders in solar energy when we're the Sunshine State? It's an unbelievable economic opportunity for us.
And finally, I want to ask about sunny day flooding. We're experiencing that a little bit to some degree here in Tampa, but what can you tell us about Miami Beach?
Well, I can tell you I got elected. I always say I wasn't swept into office. I was kind of floated into office in Miami Beach with a promise that we're going to attack this problem. That's what we did. We don't have all the answers. We had a lot of questions, but what we didn't do is do nothing. We didn't hire analysts. You know, we had consultants to hire consultants. We began a $500 million project to raise our roads, put in pumps, put in generators, raise our seawalls, change our building codes, all the things we needed to do to make Miami Beach have a great, bright future. The state of Florida was really no help to us. What at all? You know, as you know, they wouldn't even use the word climate change. So we had to go it alone. But I could tell you, if I'm elected governor, all these communities will no longer have to go it alone. We're going to make sure we offer them the expertise along with the chief resiliency officer and also make sure that we offer some type of matching funding for poorer communities that don't have the resources to create resiliency due to sea level rise so we can kickstart them and help them go along that path. That's about our future. And I can tell you, no companies want to come to Florida with high-paying jobs if they don't think you're investing in your future. You better invest in resiliency.
Well, that's Philip Levine, one of the Democrats running for governor. I spoke to him in January. And I'm going to play this much shorter clips from Adam Putnam right now, who when he had his big kickoff last May, so 11 months ago or so, this is how he responded to similar questions. So here's Adam Putnam.
If you're Florida governor, what do you think the Florida governor should do about reducing carbon dioxide emissions?
Well, certainly any policy of that size should be federal in nature so that we don't put Florida jobs at risk vis-a-vis other states and other countries. I'm focused on making Florida the launch pad for the American dream. We can be the magnet for talent from all over for people to raise their families here, start their businesses here, and grow their businesses here. And that is the focus that any governor should make their number one priority.
So if the federal government does nothing, you're okay with that?
Let's see what the federal government does.
Well, that's Adam Putnam. So, Delaney, what are your thoughts about how Adam Putnam especially responded to the question about carbon dioxide emissions?
So I've heard that clip, and Commissioner Putnam is very quick to push all of the responsibility onto the federal government. And what I would prefer to see is that we elect a leader who doesn't avoid his or her responsibility, but embraces it. And quite frankly, I thought his answer was cowardly. He had no vision, he offered no support, and in essence, he wanted to avoid the question and get away from the reporter, you, as quickly as possible. And those are traits of someone who's a denier. And so all in all, I thought his answer was disgraceful. I'll support anyone who makes climate a priority, and I know that both Philip Levine and Gwen Graham and anyone other than Scott or Putnam is a step in the right direction. So right now we need to focus on local solutions. Start in your local towns and cities and the state of Florida. We can't rely on Washington right now.
Guy, do you have anything?
I would just say that Adam Putnam is one of the trustees of the environment under the Constitution and the common law. And how would you feel if your family's trust was managed by the First National Bank and you said, what are you going to do to make sure my return on my money is pretty good? And he said, well, we're going to wait and see what somebody else does. That's not discharging a fiduciary duty. That's not being a leader. So I hope that whoever comes along in elected office decides they're going to be active, they're going to discharge their fiduciary duty, and they're going to take a leadership role.
Our guests are Guy Burns, an attorney, and Delaney Reynolds, an 18-year-old who is suing Adam Putnam and others in the Florida government. Let's go see if we can quickly hear from David in Pasco County.
Hey, Sean, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for holding.
I support solar 100%, and I think under new construction, I think any home built in Florida or any business should have solar panels on the roof. We're wasting a lot of space. And quickly about the ocean level rise, you know, Florida years ago was a large amount underneath the ocean, and I'm not opposed to that happening again. I mean, that, maybe that's nature's way of taking care. You know, it does affect a lot of people, but like I say, Florida was underwater years ago, and it wouldn't bother me to see it underwater again.
All right, well, you're going to have to leave it on that ominous note. Thank you for that call, David. Our guests have been Delaney Reynolds and Guy Burns. Delaney is an 18-year-old college freshman and climate activist from Miami, and Guy Burns is an attorney and managing partner at Johnson, Pope, Bocor, Ruppel, and Burns, based in Tampa. They're part of a lawsuit against Florida for not taking action on the climate disaster. Thanks so much for joining us on WMNF's Midpoint, Delaney and Guy.
Thanks for having us on.
Thank you, Delaney.
Thank you so much for having us.
And I want to thank everyone who called, emailed, and texted today. If you're still on hold or if you'd like to leave a voicemail with your thoughts, give me a call at 813-238-8001, extension 114. I'll play your message next show. Thanks to Alvaro Montealegre and to Frank Knox. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of WMNF News Midpoint Monday. I'll be back next Monday at noon on WMNF's Midpoint. Stay tuned now for John Gilmore, an executive session coming up after NPR on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota.